We are going to continue with Pirkei Avos and probably finish or close to finish this fourth Mishnah today. But before I do that, I want to do something else. And I want to speak about something from last week's Sedra. And as I will apply it, you'll understand why we are deviating from what I said we wouldn't do. But here, there's every rule has its exception, and this is the exception. In fact, Yisrael Salanter said, when it comes to Torah, there are no rules, and even that's not a rule. There is a medrash which we have spoken about numerous times. Today I want to speak about it a little bit from a little different perspective. The medrash says the following. Rabbi Akiva Hayadoresh. Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha. The Ha'am Nimnimu. And the people began to go to sleep. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. Bikesh la'oraron. And he wanted to wake them up. So he said to them the following. Ma'roa saw Esther. Shemolcha al-mei avi Esther v'sheva medinos. What did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 medinos? Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sarah Imenu, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 medinos. And they all woke up. What connection is there between Sarah's 127 years and Esther's 127 provinces, except at the same number? And Rabbi Akiva went on. What was Rabbi Akiva telling them? Thinking, perhaps, that what's going on over here was the following. Rabbi Akiva's students lived in a very tragic and difficult time in Jewish history. It was immediately after the destruction of the Second Temple. It was called the Shas Hashmad. The Roman government came down very hard on Klal Yisrael. There was a rebellion going on under Bar Kokhba at this time, who Rabbi Akiva thought maybe could be Mashiach. And because of that, the Romans were interested in suppressing, to say the least, this rebellion and uprising. And that's the period of time of the Asara Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs, amongst whom was Rabbi Akiva. Very, very difficult time for Klal Yisrael. And Rabbi Akiva was doresh. He was demanding from them. Doresh can mean to give a drasha, but it can also mean to make demands. Rabbi Akiva was demanding of his students to be active, to accomplish. And they were menamnim. Now, menamnim doesn't mean to go to sleep. The Gemara describes nimnum, if you read the Megillah, menamnim, you're yotze. If you're asleep, obviously you can't read the Megillah. What it means is you're drimling. Which means, the Gemara says, if somebody calls to you, you can answer them. But you won't initiate a conversation. You're awake and not awake, asleep and not asleep. You're in between. You're somewhere in the twilight zone. That is nimnum. Meaning, they didn't want to become active. They were basically passive. They weren't dynamic. Because they just felt that the times are very, very difficult and they couldn't overcome the difficulties. Rabbi Akiva told them the following. Esther HaMalka also didn't live in easy times. She lived immediately after the destruction of the First Temple. And things were difficult then too. She lived in Gaulis. And she was plucked away from her husband, according to the Gemara. Mordechai was her husband. And forced to go and live in a palace with a harem. eventually to become the wife of a goy, to have a child who thought he was a goy, even though he was Jewish, but her child was Koresh, Cyrus, who considered himself a full-fledged Persian non-Jew, didn't consider himself a Jew. This was not, I imagine, Esther's dream when she was a young Beis Yaakov girl, you know, looking forward to joining the harem in the king of Persia's palace and having the great nachas of having a child who thinks he's a goy. That's not exactly, I don't think, what her dream, childhood dream was. She lived a very difficult life. So how did she overcome the difficulties and was able to be Esther HaMalka and save Klal Yisrael and rule over 127 Medinos? Because she looked to her great-great-grandmother, Sora Imenu, who lived 127 years. And the Torah says, Shnei Chaye Sora, not that 127 years passed over her, but Kulam Shavim Letova. All of Sora Imenu's years were equally for the good. Now that does not mean that all of Sora Imenu's years were equally good, because they weren't. The 90 years she didn't have children were not equally good with the 37 years she had Yitzchak. The night she was dragged to Paro or Avimelech was not equally good with the day they celebrated Yitzchak Avinu's bris. Sora Imenu had many, many difficult times in her life. So it doesn't say they all were equally good. It says they all were equally for the good. Sora Imenu was able to deal with every situation and channel it and use it in a positive way. That's what it means. They all were equally lit over for the sake, for good. And we've explained in the past, I'm not going to go into detail now, just take my word for it, that Tova means that which is eternal. She was able to see that even though short term, she had to deal with very, very difficult and sometimes very bitter experiences, but in the light of eternity, she was able to take them and use them in a positive way. Use them towards eternity. So that was Sora Imenu. And the truth is, that is what Malchus is. What royalty is. The Khuzri says, the king of the Khuzars, who's learning with this Chacham, because he wants to convert, or he wants to investigate Judaism, and eventually he converted. He asks the mentor, his mentor, the Talmud Chacham, describe for me a tzaddik. So the mentor says to him the following, a tzaddik is somebody who can provide for all of his subjects what they need, and in order that when he needs to call upon them to serve him, they're all ready to serve him. So the king says, I think you misunderstood me. I asked you to describe a tzaddik, you described the king. He said, that's a tzaddik. A tzaddik is someone who knows how to provide for all his abilities, capabilities, talents, emotions. Those are his servants. And he knows how to provide each one what it needs, that when he needs to call upon that emotion, that talent, that ability, that capability, it's able to serve him, he's able to use it properly. That is a tzaddik, and a tzaddik is a melech, the Gemara says. Man malki rabbanan, who are the real kings? Talmidei chachamim, who know how to rule over themselves. The Shurei Das, even though he doesn't mention this kuzri, says basically the same idea. The Medrash says that when Yehuda and Binyamin were Yosef were arguing over Binyamin after Yosef made it look like he had stolen, and Yehuda was begging to let him go and let him go back to his father. So the other tribe said, Melachim medainim ze im ze. Kings are arguing with each other. We're not going to stick our head between two kings. We're just going to stay out of this. So the Shurei Das asks, I understand Yosef was a king. He ruled over, he was the second in command in Egypt, right? And he ruled over thousands, if not millions of people. But Yehuda, what kind of king was he? Who did he rule over? A few brothers? That's called a king? Two kings are arguing. What kind of king was Yehuda? So he says this idea, a king is not dependent on how many people you rule. It's on how you are fit to rule over yourself. He said, because somebody who's a king, only because he rules over other people, is really a slave. And he gave the example of the last Tsar of Russia, Tsar Nikolai, ruled over millions of people. But he was so afraid of being assassinated that he didn't sleep in the same room for more than 15 minutes every night. Every 15 minutes, they'd wake him up, move him to another room in his castle. And he had plenty of rooms. Because he was afraid of being assassinated, and in the end, he was assassinated. And that's a king. He ruled over millions of people. He was a slave. So royalty doesn't depend on how many people you rule over. It depends if you're the kind of person who can rule over himself. That is malchus. That's what royalty is. That a person is able to overcome difficult times, challenges, and limitations, and be able to function. And that's basically what Rabbi Akiva told his students. Right? Esther was able to take a difficult life and rule over 127 Medinos and use her life in the most positive way of saving Klal Yisrael, being the heroine of Purim, because she learned from Sara Imenu, who ruled over every moment of her life and overcame all the challenges that God sent her way. You can't control what situations come up in life. God controls that. You can control how you deal with them. And if you deal with them properly, that's called malchus. That's called royalty. The Gemara says, Hillel mechai v'so'anim. Hillel obligates poor people. Somebody's going to come after 120 years and God's going to say, why didn't you learn Torah? So I was too poor. I just couldn't. I had to work hard for a living and I didn't have any money and I couldn't learn. So God's going to say, but Hillel was also very poor. He was so poor that he couldn't afford the little bit of money that it took to get into the Beis Medrash. So he went up on the skylight and he almost was killed by a snowstorm. Found him almost half dead the next day. So if you use poverty as an excuse, Hillel's going to obligate you. Always bothered me. I mean, how in the world? Hillel was Hillel. If I come to Din and they ask me, how come you didn't learn Torah? And I said I was poor. And they tell me, well, Hillel was poor and he learned Torah. He was Hillel. I'm not Hillel. What do you want from me? And I think what it means is the following. You can't say that poverty prevents you from learning Torah. Because Hillel was poor and he learned. What are you going to tell me? Well, Hillel was different. Fine. Then use a different excuse. Don't use the excuse of poverty. There's another reason why you're different than Hillel, but not because of poverty. Poverty can't be the excuse because you see that Hillel could be poor and still learn. So what are you going to tell me? That you're not Hillel. Fine. So tell me why you're not Hillel. Use a different excuse. Don't tell me because you're poor. Poverty can't be the excuse. And the Gemara gives other examples of other people who obligate. Somebody who was extremely rich and learned Torah. Somebody who had a big Yetzer Hara, Yosef, and he also learned Torah. You can't use these things as excuses because it's possible to overcome them. You can't overcome it? Fine. Then tell me the real excuse. Why you can't overcome it. Don't tell me that poverty is the cause. Because poverty is not the cause. Because you say Hillel could overcome that. Now, I'll tell you why I told you this.
The answer still comes back to him was Hillel.
No, fine. But why? So then what are you different than him? But it's not the poverty.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Okay. Why am I telling you this? In the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, Klal Yisrael lost a very, very illustrious, lost a lot of people. But one in specific that, to a certain degree, had a kesher to this year. That was Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, the Mir Rosh Yeshiva. I'm a little bit related, very distant. One of my sons-in-law, his mother is a Finkel. She's a cousin to Rav Nosson Tzvi's family, the Ermans. And in fact, he gave me this idea about Rav Nosson Tzvi, Hillel Mechayev Esu'anim. If anybody was handicapped, limited, right, and if you saw him, he had advanced Parkinson's disease. Not a little bit of a tremor, but advanced Parkinson's. He couldn't stand up on his own. A person like that, under normal circumstances, would have sat in front of the television all day and become completely inactive. Basically. Basically. You know, there are all kinds of Rosh Yeshivas. Some Rosh Yeshivas excel in raising funds for their yeshiva and maintaining it. They don't have time too much to give shiurim or to be involved with the students personally. They leave that to others, and they basically are the ones that support their yeshivas, and some of them do it very well. Some, on the other hand, are not so great in fundraising, but they give shiurim, and give over their chachma. That's what they excel in. And some are not great in the shiurim they give or the support to yeshiva, but they have a personal relationship with their students. And other people take care of the other things. Those are basically the three functions of a Rosh Yeshiva. Not everybody is qualified to do all three or to be excellent in all three. Rav Nosson Tzvi, despite his handicap, was excellent in all three. He supported Mir Yeshiva, which has a budget which, just thinking about it, makes me sick. Right, I mean, I have a little yeshiva, Baruch Hashem, right? I don't have to raise too much money because I couldn't. But he had this yoch on his shoulders of millions and millions, not a year, month. And he developed a yeshiva that's the biggest yeshiva since Sur and Pumbedisa in Bavel. And the financial burden was on his shoulders. And I was just in Los Angeles. He told me about 2 years ago he was there. He came to the city and he said he has to raise $1 million in Los Angeles. They laughed at him. They said, you'll leave here the most, if you're lucky, with $200,000. He left there with $850,000. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And so, okay, fine, so he's a fundraiser. He gave shiurim every day, vadim. Not only that, but he had a shita that if anybody asked him to learn with them, the chavrusa, he learned with them. Story goes that a little six-year-old wrote him a letter that he wants to learn with the chavrusa. He told him, come this and this time, Shabbos afternoon, I'll learn with you. And he learned with this little boy. Anybody. He never refused somebody. Right? I don't know where he got the time for. Right? It's this idea of Hillel Mechayev Esu'anim, every Rosh Yeshiva in Lost His Love is going to give excuses why he couldn't raise money or why he couldn't have time to give shiurim. He gave shiurim in Mir, he gave shiurim in Brachfeld, the Mir in Brachfeld, constantly. And they had to pick him up to be able to stand to say the shiur. And he had a personal relationship with every Talmud. He knew every person. And he remembered them. He remembered what they needed. He met people. People told me in Los Angeles that he met them once, and they spoke to him about a problem. A year later, he remembered the problem and asked them. He saw them again somewhere else, remembered who they were, and he remembered what they spoke about, and he asked them how things are doing. And each bacher in Mir wanted to, had a relationship with him. And he knew them. He knew them all. Beyond my comprehension. So, he is a mechayev. He's a person that, if you, Rachman Litzlan, have a handicap, or you're limited, or whatever it may be, it's not a good excuse, because you couldn't get too much more handicapped than him. And he lived not a productive life, but a life that 10 normal people couldn't live. So you see that if you have a desire, you can overcome all these things. That's the perennial malchus. I said that there's a kesher over here, besides my family, very loose family kesher. But there's another kesher. When the shir was in the old Israel Center on Strauss, for a good portion of the time, Reb Nosson Stee's mother, who she should live for many healthy years, she's still alive, she's an elderly woman, his mother used to come to the shir. In fact, the way I found out who she was, I didn't know who she was. There are many illustrious people who come to the shir. Some of them I know and some of them I don't know. I'm not going to embarrass them now by letting you know who they are. This woman came over to me after the shir, an elderly woman, and she said that she enjoyed the shir, and she said, maybe you know my son. Okay. So I said, I took the bait, and I said, okay, who's your son? She said, Nosson Tzvi Finkel. I said, Nosson Tzvi Finkel, you mean the Rosh Hashiva of Mir? She said, yeah, that's my son. He's a good boy, isn't he? That's a mother. That's a mother. I said, yeah, he's a good boy. In any case, so there was a kesher between this shir and Reb Nosson Tzvi also. But I thought it's important to make mention because it really is a mechayev. And losing such a personality, both for the Mir Yeshiva and for Klal Yisrael in general, is a big loss. Very big loss.